Welcome to back to the roundtable. Why teach women's history? What are the challenges of bringing women's history to the public? What exact messages and lessons should be passed on? We'll discuss these questions and many more with two experts who are working hard in the trenches in a partnership with the New York Council for the Humanities. We welcome your phone calls as well to discuss these issues this morning. Sally Roche Wagner of the Matilda Jocelyn Gage Foundation is here to tell us the story of the Gage Foundation's work to transform the historic house museum that was Gage's home. Gage, a contemporary of Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, was herself a pioneering women's rights and Native American rights advocate who also fought for separation of religion and state and the abolition of slavery. Sally, a great pleasure to have you on the telephone. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much. I'm delighted to be with you.
A great pleasure. Shailene Meany is also here. She teaches women's literature and gender studies at Russell Sage College in Troy. She is also the director of the Upton Center for Women's Studies at Russell Sage. And Shailene, it's a great pleasure to have you before our microphones. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.
Let us, let us begin with you when we talk about Women's History Month and when we discuss the importance of teaching this history as someone who does it for a living. What is so important and what are the challenges of getting those messages across to both men and women?
Well, of course, I teach at Russell Sage College, which is a women's college.
That's
so
right.
Getting messages across to men is largely something that we're doing with our community outreach work and with the partnerships we have with the New York State Council for the Humanities, with the Rensselaer County Historical Society and other organizations of that type. And I, of course, am not a historian, which makes me an interesting person to talk to about Women's History Month, I suppose. My own work is in literature, actually.
But we learn a lot of the history from that literature.
We do. And it's through teaching literature and talking with students about those periods that I've become interested in history myself. My own work is in the 1920s, and it took me a lot of learning about history in order to really understand the literature of that period effectively.
And for you, Sally, as far as the work you do with the Gage Foundation, in getting obviously this woman's story across, but to put it into context of what that process is like.
Well, I think that we have this sense that history is something that happened and something that we know about and there's nothing new to tell. Well, in fact, history is, I think, should be considered a verb rather than a noun, that we history, because until the 1960s, we had the story of rich white men and their wars and their dates, and that really was what we understood as history. History is socially constructed behavior. It's not what happened, it's who tells the story. And what's happened since the movements of the 60s is that there are all these voices that were never heard before. And history now is one of the most vibrant, I think, social justice processes where we're beginning to understand ourselves in very new and much, much richer ways. You know, what happened is told from a multiplicity of perspectives. There's not one story. There are stories to tell. And Matilda Jocelyn Gage represents one of those stories. And when we introduce her, we introduce really a very different history of women's rights. I think we have this sense that it was Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Well, in fact, there was a triumvirate of the National Woman Suffrage Association, and Gage was the third member. She was the one who had connections with the Haudenosaunee, the Six Nations of the Iroquois Confederacy. She wrote about them when she was president of the National Woman Suffrage Association, wrote about the superior position of Haudenosaunee women, and in 1893, she was adopted in an honorary adoption into the Wolf Clan of the Mohawk Nation. And she writes to her daughter and says, my clan sisters are considering me for a voice in the Council of Matrons, which would give me a say in the choosing of the chief. The same year, she is arrested for voting in a school election in her own village. That's where she got her vision of how women should be treated, was through the Native women that she knew and read about and studied.
We are having a discussion about Women's History Month this morning in our partnership with the New York Council for the Humanities. We welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551, because this is what the Council does so well, of having these community conversations and having really smart people talk about the subjects of the day. And we welcome your phone calls this morning, 1-800-348-2551. I do want to just make mention, because I found this fascinating, but Matilda Jocelyn Gage was Frank Baum, who was the author of Wizard of Oz, was his mother-in-law.
Yes. And actually, I think the real lesson here, Joe, is listen to your mother-in-law. Because Frank Baum...
But I don't want to.
And he really had trouble supporting his family. And finally, Matilda said to him, and she spent every winter with them for the last 14 years of her life. She and Frank were very close. In fact, he lived in the house, the Gage House in Fayetteville, New York, that we've restored it and turned it into the Gage Center of Dialogue about Social Justice Issues. He lived here in the summer of 1887, photographed the house, and we've restored the house based on his photographs. It's the only home in the country that's open to the public where he lived. But when he kept going bankrupt, Matilda said to him, write down those stories that you tell your four sons. They're great stories. And not only did she tell him to write the stories, and the whole family has agreed, and historians and scholars are as well, that she's the reason that we have the Oz stories. She's the one who really compelled him to write them. But also the books, if you read all 14 of his Oz books, they are a vision of a world of peace and social justice. By the third book, they're run by women. It's a matriarchy.
That's fascinating. Shailene, when you look at, do you have anything, obviously, have you studied that at all in your look at the literature of the time?
Studied.
A Gage. And
I actually haven't. It's a little bit earlier than the period that I focus on myself.
And what brought you to the 20s?
What brought me to the 20s? Well, it's an interesting period to look at women's travel, and women's travel writing is what I focus on specifically in my research. And that's a period right after women get the right to vote. It's a period where women are moving out into all sorts of realms of popular culture, getting involved in all kinds of social movements. It's an interesting period.
When you look at that particular period, how... there's what's happening on the ground. There's what's actually happening, and what is admitted to and what is realized. And then how long before it starts to show up in the literature and the books of the time? Do you see it almost instantaneously, or does it take a while?
Well, you do. I'm looking at travel writing, of course, so it's people writing about lived experiences at that moment. So you can see reflected there conversations about the changing nature of the U.S., people going from east to west and talking about the ways that they see the fashions changing and the fashions being carried through department stores and the representations of femininity shifting, and also the ways that they're similar from the East Coast to the West Coast at that time, and women beginning to complain about how everybody looks the same and America is being so homogenized. And it's the 1920s. And we feel like, hey, didn't I just read this last week about today? Which is a neat thing for our students to look at.
We are talking about Women's History Month and having a discussion with our partnership, because of our partnership with the New York Council for the Humanities. We welcome your phone calls this morning, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551. We'll continue our conversation after the short break. Talking about Women's History Month this morning, we have two wonderful guests with us. Sally Roche Wagner of the Matilda Jocelyn Gage Foundation is here. So is Shailene Meany. She teaches women's literature and gender studies at Russell Sage College in Troy and is also the director of the Upton Center for Women's Studies at Russell Sage. And Shailene, you were talking a moment ago about the 20s and talking about fashions and so forth. You have just come out of a project with the council and also the Rensselaer County Historical Society called Revolution on the Runway, taking a look at that very subject.
Absolutely. Revolution on the Runway was an event created by four students who are women's studies minors at Russell Sage College in conjunction with Rensselaer County Historical Society. They had the opportunity to work with society staff as well as volunteers to work their way through the collections and drew out pieces of clothing covering 100 years of fashion. The students did research on who donated those pieces and who wore those pieces, but also what were the politics, the gender politics around fashion during those periods. How do we see the changes from the corset to the bound breasts? And how does that relate to what's going on in American society at that time? So students were really delving into fashion history, but also social history and even labor history and looking at who made these dresses and what conditions were they made under. So bringing them into a lot of conversations in history. And they, as I said, there are four young women working on this project. Did some really interesting work.
And you have students working on a community conversation project as well?
We do. Those students are actually my literature students, my senior seminar in English. They are also interested in issues of feminist theory and how to read literature with an eye to women's issues and with feminist questions. So they're actually working with the New York Council on the Humanities to create a community conversations project focused on Women's History Month. So choosing a text that they think will help particularly urban communities get conversations going among adults and high school students. They've been looking at texts by Maya Angelou and several other writers, Esmeralda Santiago, thinking about what kinds of literature will get a community talking about women's issues and about women's voices in history. Who's talked? Who's been listened to? What kinds of questions get asked if you listen to women's voices? So very interesting and exciting work.
Very important work as well, being done at Russell Sage with the Council for the Humanities. Sal, you know, one of the questions that we talked about at the beginning that I threw out was, what are the challenges of bringing women's history to the public? In telling Gage's story and creating the center and museum, what have your challenges been?
I think our challenges have been largely, how do we bring to the fore a woman who's been written out of history? And how do we, in the process, tell a richer story, a story that has more complexity? I think one of the things that's been extraordinarily helpful to us is that I'm a speaker in the humanities through the New York Council for the Humanities, and through that program, I've been able to bring the story of Gage to places all over the state, and that then encourages people to come to visit the Gage home. It's been a wonderful partnership that we've had. But the challenge of a woman who, in the words of Gloria Steinem, was the woman who was ahead of the women who were ahead of their time, presents both a challenge and a real opportunity in this time period, because she speaks so much to the issues that we're facing today. One example is that by the mid-19th century, there were numerous forms of birth control that were available. And with the passage of a legislation that enabled what was really the conservative Christians to determine what was obscene in America, birth control was made illegal in this country for 100 years. And until the 1960s and the final removal of the Comstock Acts by the Supreme Court, it was, you know, women didn't have access to birth control. And interesting that we're facing the same sort of issue today. And Gage was very strongly in support of a woman's right to choose whether or not she would birth. The challenge, of course, is how do you take a woman who has such radical ideas and make them possible for people to really think about and talk about in a safe environment? And so we're using dialogue as the language of the institution. We use Gage's words as the text, but people are really invited to think about and share their own ideas in an environment where there is no sort of correct line. It's a very exciting process, and it's led to and continues to lead to absolutely fascinating discussions, because once people are free of that fear that there will be just acrimony the moment we touch on controversial issues and realize that there's a way that we can really respectfully listen to each other's ideas, not to change them, but to really understand where someone is coming from, we have a very exciting process.
The words that you use as the text, her words, the latest that they were written, what year?
Well, here's an example from 1878. She said, "For a woman to birth an unwanted child is a crime against the mother and a sin against the soul of the child. Every child born," she said, "should be a wanted child, and that requires that the mother be able to determine when she's ready to birth and give, if you will, social birth to the child."
So that was 1878, and we're still fighting about it.
Exactly.
So what does that tell us?
Well, I think it tells us that it's important that we know our history, that this isn't just an issue that came up yesterday. And in 1850, women made half the wages that men made. Today they make 70%. You know, we give students the math question. Okay, 150 years ago women made this much. Today they make this much. At this rate, when will women have pay equity in the United States of America? And, you know, I think placing it in that context, we begin to see that this is an ongoing issue, that the issue of women's rights is one that women in the 19th century achieved some goals, but they continued. Gage said, you know, we are simply planting the winter wheat. It will be those who come after us who enter into the harvest. And so we continue to plant the seeds, and those who come after us will enter into the harvest. But I think that sense of historic continuity, that we're not inventing a new issue, that this has been with us, you know, since the beginning of the country in some cases. And how do we further this? How do we further the issue of rights? Not just for women, but Native American sovereignty and treaty rights, which Gage supported. Gage said there will be no permanent peace in this country until there is absolute equality for every group. We use that, and we asked students, well, is the Civil War over yet? You know, have we achieved absolute equality? And I think that historic sense of continuity of the fight for justice and rights is the thing that we hope to achieve.
We go to the phones, and we go to Jim and Adams. Jim, good morning, and welcome to the conversation.
Good morning, Joe. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Thanks for having me on the program.
Pleasure.
I'm glad to hear that you're having this program today, amongst all the other interesting things you do. We're going to learn a lot more about the other sides of the historical record of our country with the women's stories coming in there. And there we go again as we learn more about those matters. We have the example that the Native American women were setting in their societies, choosing the chiefs. And I'd heard somewhere recently, probably on your radio station recently, that women were always watching the young children as they grew up, and they formed their opinions and judgments of them, the young males, from their childhood on through, not just a little rushed few weeks or few months to try to get to know someone as a candidate for becoming a leader in our society. And I was just wondering if any of your guests would have any comparison to how women's equity is developing in other countries around the world.
Good question. Anybody want to take that?
Oh, I'd be happy to jump in, and then if you have
sure
thoughts too. The truth is that we're the laughing stock of the world in terms of our efforts to promote women's rights in other countries, but our failure to practice them here. We still do not have equal rights for women guaranteed in the Constitution. We are the only nation in the United Nations that has failed to ratify CEDAW, which is essentially the universal or the International Declaration of Rights of Women. We have fewer women in political office. Our wage equity, our child care, health care, you know, all of the women's issues, we are very low in terms of comparisons internationally. I think we tie with South Africa for having the worst child care in the mm-hmm. world. And we don't rate well with industrialized nations. Our maternal death rate is something like the 40th in the world. It's been declared a crisis by Amnesty International. We've got a lot of work to do. And I think when we focus on women in the Mideast and their burqas, it's a distraction from our looking at the position that we have in this country today and the work that we need to do here.
Sally, we got about half a minute left, but anything you'd like to add?
No, I absolutely agree with Sally. Of course, looking at the lives of women in other nations and advances that are being made slowly, Saudi women's right to vote, for instance, coming through last year, is a good way to have students be looking at the processes of change and understanding how those changes fit into the larger picture, right? And seeing that we are not where we want to be, and that is absolutely the case, that there are many issues here at home that we still need to work toward equality on.
This discussion comes from our partnership with the New York Council for the Humanities. My thanks to Sally Roche Wagner of the Matilda Jocelyn Gage Foundation and to Shalene Meany, who teaches women's literature and gender studies at Russell Sage College in Troy. Sally and Shalene, thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure.
Thank you, Joe. It was wonderful.
Thank you, Joe.
Upcoming events to learn more about women's history and literature can be found on the Council's event calendar at their website, nyhumanities.org. nyhumanities.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.